Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of the third season of My Dog Will Eat My Face. In this episode, I'm really going to discuss some oddities, for lack of a better word, that have been occurring with respect to my health, actually. So this could be seen as a health update for those folks that occasionally come on here to see how I'm doing, and it spares me from making tons of phone calls to different people just to keep them updated. Really, it's done out of laziness. I don't got time for that. But it's also going to illustrate some very strange things that have been occurring with respect to my health. And for the most part, they're very good things, actually, but they run entirely counter to what would be considered normal, logical cause and effect. I know what I just said is kind of confusing, and don't worry, I'm going to confuse you more, maybe as much as my doctors say they're confused. because of the changes going on in my body. So, this will be an interesting update, probably the most interesting one yet, because it illustrates completely unusual occurrences that, as far as I know, lack any medical explanation. Now, maybe there's a group of doctors somewhere that could happily sit me down and do an extensive study to try to find a means to explain it. But I don't really have that, especially when I'm in hospice care. So, unfortunately, that's not really an option. And what's more is I don't know if I would enjoy being poked and prodded to try to determine what's going on in my body. So, all that being said, sit tight. It's going to be an interesting ride as I share with you the most recent changes that have occurred with respect to my health. So, right off the bat, I am going to begin with some really good changes that have recently occurred, at least since my horrific stay in a nursing home. And I'm just going to cover what's happened since I've been home, I think, since then. And right now, I'm just going to, cover those quote-unquote positive things that are definitely good. So, I doubt many of you recall, but I'm sure there are others of you that do, that know me personally. But I very recently was on an extremely high oxygen flow at home that required two concentrators, actually, to keep me at an appropriate level. And that came to 16 liters of constant airflow into my nose through a cannula. And I'll tell you, 16 liters just being stuffed into your face nonstop, it's like having a couple of sandblasters up each nostril and just on full blow. It's not pleasant. It's not pleasant for how it feels, obviously. It's also not pleasant because of how badly it dries out the nostrils. So, as a side effect of that, I would often get a lot of nosebleeds and things like that because my nostrils were just getting pummeled with such a severe high intake of 16 liters of oxygen. Well, since I have returned home, my oxygen level has been only between 2 and 4 liters. So I'm still on supplemental oxygen to survive, so to speak. But 2 to 4 liters is certainly better than 16 liters. And I don't really understand fully what caused such a reduction, because if I try to reduce my oxygen intake just on my own, or even if a nurse came over and tried to reduce it, or if I was off the oxygen just for the smallest amount of time, my oxygen level would just crash to and well beyond cardiac arrest levels. But now, the most I have my oxygen up to is 4 liters. And there's a lot of times now during the day where I go completely off oxygen, where I'm just on room air and can relatively manage it to a certain point. Now, that's a big deal. I mean, if I could go on room air at all for even, say, 15 minutes, that's a huge improvement over before, whereas if I were off my oxygen just for, 2 minutes, it would just start to crash. My oxygen levels would just plummet. And my heart rate would just skyrocket as my weak heart was trying to keep up to pump oxygen to the various areas of my body. So The one good thing that came out of being locked away in that nursing home was they basically weaned me off that 16-liter intake. And they did blood results where they found that I was retaining copious amounts of carbon dioxide. Because my brain was just basically thinking, oh, I'm getting all this oxygen, I need to retain more CO2. And then as I retained that more and more, it was poisoning the brain. So, the bottom line there is more oxygen is not always better. With me, it apparently resulted in some very peculiar things with what my body was hanging on to. And was inadvertently through those things was possibly poisoning my brain slowly. So, as I said, they weaned me off of the oxygen. And that's probably the one good thing that came out of that terrible event. And since I've been home now for many weeks, frankly, it's not deviated at all. At first, it was only 2 liters. It went up shortly thereafter to 4. But since then, it's not really changed. And that's about the same level that I was at when I first got drop-kicked to hospice care. So it's a huge improvement, and I am able to go without oxygen for short periods of time to go do something. I'm able to take my dog out more for a walk, which he loves. I'm able to get some exercise. And he's able to get some exercise, the poor little fat boy. I don't think he's fat. The vet told me that he's a little overweight and he needs to lose some weight. So, anyway. He apparently needs more exercise. I think he looks perfect the way he is, but that's just me. Anyway. So, yeah, it's really enabled a significant improvement in my quality of life. Just that single change right there. In addition to that, however, there have been other positive changes. Another significant area of change is in my body weight. The issue originally with body weight was I was retaining a copious amount of fluid in my body. That is a very common symptom of congestive heart failure. Your body cannot get the fluid out from especially extremities because it's so weak. And you just end up building up more and more fluid. And your weight just can skyrocket. There was a time not long ago, certainly within the last 6 months, maybe a little bit longer, maybe 8 months, where I was hitting 190 pounds and dangerously getting up and close to 200 pounds as my weight. And for me, that's the most I've ever weighed in my life. I am only 5'8". I'm not a big guy. And all my life, I've been on the skinny side, actually. It just naturally, I know some people naturally are just a little pudgy, and it's something they struggle with their whole lives. There's other people that are just skinny through no action of their own. It's just something with how their body handles its metabolism and weight gain and so on and so on. And so I was one of those where I was just always naturally on the thin side or skinny side. So for me to hit 200 was just bad in so many ways, not the least of which it was emotionally devastating to me. I was like, oh my God, I am turning into a gigantic glob. I am just, ugh. And that was definitely an area in my health that bothered me, needless to say. But as recently as just yesterday, my weight has dropped to 171. So it went from 190 something, like one, let's say 192 or something like that, to 171 very quickly. And it was just fluid. It was just water weight. And so there's no real explanation for that. I'm on the same diuretics that I was on before. When you're in CHF or congestive heart failure and you're retaining fluid, they put you on diuretics to try to help you to pee out the fluid, frankly, is what it is. It makes you pee. And there's not really been any change whatsoever with respect to my diuretics from when I was struggling around 190-something to today when I'm at 171 pounds. If I get down to 160, I will weigh as much as I weighed my senior year of high school. So as I see it, even if I stop now, if I stop losing weight now, being only 11 pounds up from my weight in high school is pretty darn good for a 43-year-old man. That's how I see it. And so I'm actually thrilled. And the loss absolutely was fluid. It's not muscular. It's not fat. It's fluid just coming off, shaving off. And we don't really know why the diuretics so suddenly decided to work so much better for me. It is a complete mystery. The only theory I have is that I got down in weight just through happenstance on one day, and the diuretics were then able to be more effective, because when you retain a bunch of fluid, unfortunately, your body doesn't respond as well to diuretics. So it can really snowball. So if you're on diuretics and you already are retaining a ton of fluid, your body does not react as well as it should or could to the medication that you're on. So my own personal theory is I had a brief moment where I was low enough to where the diuretic subtly became effective or more effective. And then from there, they did their actual magic and started to shave off the water weight. And I shared that with my nurses, and they said, that's a good theory, but we don't know. We don't know why the change happened. So that's another hugely important and positive change. I can't imagine anyone complaining about that kind of change. But another area of change goes with the weight, and that is a huge reduction of edema. Before, it was absolutely not uncommon for me to have flare-ups of terrible edema, yeah. It's not a word. Edema. And I would get it mainly in my feet and in my lower legs. And also in my gut, which was lovely, right? That's what I need. To have a big, fat gut. No, thank you. But anyway, yes, I was suffering off and on from... Actually, never off. I was suffering on varying severity of edema. It was always there. It could also go into your lungs. My nurse, prior to the nursing home, would always hear a crackling in the lower right lobe of my right lung. And it was there for years. I mean, it never changed. Just a slight crackling and just slight edema fluid in the lower lobe of my right lung. Now I have a new nurse. Just because the old one left, it had nothing to do with me. But I got a new nurse now, and she doesn't hear anything on the right side now. And I think I do feel some edema in my ankles in particular. But nothing at all compared to how it used to be. And edema just also, while I'm on the topic, can be extremely painful. Because you're putting all this fluid in an area that is not meant to hold all that fluid. And so it can create an unbearable pain on top of everything else. So that's been, of course, a very, very welcome change. And improvement in my health. So, there have been some other minor improvements here and there. But those three things are really a big deal. Each one is a big deal. For those three things to occur concurrently, it is a huge deal. And when talking to my doctors and talking to my nurses ad nauseum about these changes, they say they can't explain it. They just cannot explain why these changes have occurred. But for all of them, my quality of life has improved dramatically. I've been able to walk my dog, like I said. I've been able to, this is going to sound silly, take out my own trash, but to me, that's something I couldn't do before. I can check my own mail. That's something I could never do before. So these are huge changes that have dramatically improved my life. And I'm sure I'm leaving off a few things here and there because there's been so much. But the bottom line to all that is they have no clue why any of those changes occurred. Albeit good changes and welcome changes, it'd be nice to know what the cause is. To be able to really grasp onto that and ensure it stays that way. But we have no clue what has caused these changes. None. So it's a little frustrating. And I have felt some recent sliding backwards with these benefits, to be honest. I have been feeling that I'm short of breath more than several weeks ago. And I've had a lot of other issues as well, which I'll get into here in a little bit. But yeah, I don't know why these changes have occurred. The doctors don't know. The nurses don't know. And there's nothing more I could even say on it. But as I just alluded to, there is the unfortunate truth that there have been also some negative changes that are very difficult to handle. And I will talk about that here in the next segment. So, as we know, every rose has a thorn. There have been some unfortunate things as well that have occurred with respect to my health. For actually quite some time, I would say at least a year, I have had swollen lymph nodes on both sides where the neck meets the shoulder in that area. And definitely noticeable. But they were stagnant. And there was really no other symptoms that I had with it. So, having so little data, I didn't really do anything about it. And there's little you can do in hospice. Like, let's say if I want to just have an MRI or a biopsy of them to see what the cause is, to see what might be occurring. That is just simply not an option when you're in hospice care and or Medicare. Medicare has the running policy of why should we bother to test or treat someone for another ailment when they're already dying? So, if I were to go ahead and try to get any such testing done, Medicare would almost certainly deny it. And then I would be stuck with a hefty bill. And I don't want that. But at least for the last year or so, they've been relatively stable. Until recently. Probably a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I was getting up in the morning and I felt for some reason a lot of pain around my neck and my left arm and my back. But having just gotten out of bed, I did not think much of it. You know, I could have just slept on my arm funny, who knows. But I was in the restroom and getting ready to hop in the shower. And that's when, of course, I took off my shirt and just literally exclaimed to myself, "Oh my God." Not because I was smitten with the Greek god in front of me. No, I'm kidding. I screamed, "Oh my God," because my left lymph node, same area where the neck meets the shoulder, had just exploded in size. Exploded is probably not a good word used. Nothing exploded, but it had become incredibly massive in a very short period of time, which is also odd. So that was what was apparently causing the pain. And ever since, it's been very painful. If I move my arm a certain way, it hurts. If I turn my neck a certain way, it really hurts. And the pain can really radiate down to my pectoral muscles. Other parts of my back, and it's painful, I think, because it's such a large mass now under the skin that when I try to move things around it, the skin is being pulled or tugged on because it's not used to this large mass underneath the skin. And so when I try to do something through reaching with my left arm or turning my neck, I would get a sharp pain. And I think that truly is just from it pulling on the skin. Because if I touch the lymph node at all, just touch it on the surface, it doesn't hurt whatsoever. So, I went a little panicky over this because it was so huge, and I had a weekend nurse kind of do an emergency visit with me to look at it. She certainly confirmed, yeah, that's something. There's something going on. You've got a big 3x3 inch growth under your skin. And she said she could see it under my t-shirt just when I opened the door for her, my front door to her. And so that kind of gives you an idea of how bad it is. I mean, certainly she knew why she was coming over, and so she probably looked there. But the point is, just to the naked eye, you can see it under the t-shirt, you know, just bulging with this, the size of this lymph node. But again, there's nothing really that can be done about it. All she did was take a measurement to see if it at least was shrinking or growing over time. So we could at least collect that data, right? And that's all she could do. I mean, a large lymph node could be caused by a million different things. So many different things. But the downside then is, a further downside is, it's not shrunk at all since then. As of my last nurse visit, she looked at it again, and she still says it's 3 inches by 3 inches. It hasn't really changed. While my right lymph node is there, you can kind of see it and feel it, but it's the same size it had always been for approximately the last year or so. So that was something that occurred out of nowhere. And much like everything else in my record, we don't know the cause, and I'm stuck with the same issues I mentioned before. They don't do testing, and they don't do treatment for other diseases while you're already in hospice care. Now, I could have the option of jettisoning hospice care and just going to the emergency room and getting it tested and looked at, and with whatever the results were, then when I get home, go back on hospice. People do that all the time. But I thought about it a lot, and truly, let's say if it came back and it's the worst possible scenario. Let's say it's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, okay? Do I really see myself going through cancer treatment at this point in my life? I don't. I just don't see me doing that. It would just be such a such an effort and a destructive effort for relatively so little gain, being that I'm already expected to die. So at this time, unless something else occurs, some other symptom occurs that's unbearable, or or just difficult to handle. If there's something else occurs, then I might consider doing something like that. But right now, I've elected to just let it be. And I chose that for those reasons that I already shared. And the final thing, though, that I think I need to share goes back to the oxygen. Because my nurse and I did a little experiment on her last visit. We decided to check my pulse oximeter, which tells me my oxygen level and my pulse, and to check it after I had just done some stuff around the home and walked back to where she was sitting and sat down. And so she wanted, and I was actually on room air. I wasn't wearing oxygen. And she said, great, let's see where it's at. And it was at 92%, which is excellent for me. For anyone, that's excellent. That's great. But then later she said, let's see what happens, though, when you put on the oxygen while you're sitting here. So I said, okay, and I put on the oxygen and just sat there. And then the oxygen level went down to the low 80s. It just makes no sense. And then so I took it off, and then the oxygen level went back up. It just doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, I don't know if you say that's bad or just weird, or I guess it's certainly weird. It's certainly weird. I wouldn't say it's bad, but it's certainly just goofy. It doesn't align to what logically should be happening, period. And I took the oxygen off then again, and then the oxygen level rebounded and went right back up to the 90s. And at that point, my nurse just said, I give up. They need to do like a study on you. I don't get it. This should not be happening. So there's been some bad things and some strange things, needless to say. But overall, I'd hazard to say, at least right now at this point, the good outweighs the bad. And I can live with surprising. I've surprised doctors, and my body's done wackadoodle stuff my whole life. So I can tolerate that. But I do have to worry about the lymph nodes and hope it doesn't develop into something much worse. And that's, frankly, the significant bad thing that's since occurred. from when I got out of the nursing home. And since I kind of already went there, that is, the weird, the goofy things my body does, I wanted to expand upon that a little bit more, where I say it's nothing new to me. My cardiologist would often say to me, I have an entirely unique anatomy. And that's what makes treatment for me in a lot of cases very difficult. And I'll tell you a little bit about what he was referring to. I was born without a right pulmonary artery. And on top of that, I much later in life found out I had a protein C deficiency, which could cause strange occlusion and clotting in your blood vessels. And a perfect example of it was, this was several years ago, so this is probably done, but a perfect example of what could happen from that was occurring live when they were doing a catheterization and a study. They found that I did not have any femoral arteries on either side, on either leg. So there was no major blood flow into either leg. Well, on one leg, there was nothing there. It was no femoral artery, nothing. On the other leg, I actually misspoke. Some of it was there, but it was completely occluded and was in the process of being reabsorbed by the body. I have just a personal theory that this deficiency also impacted me while I was in the womb and probably caused an occlusion of my right pulmonary artery and it to be reabsorbed by the body before I was even born. So I had an artificial shunt implanted in lieu of a natural artery when I was just a baby. I was just 1 year old. And it's still there, and it still works. But now it's calcified and not as effective. And of course, a one-year-old's pulmonary artery is not really going to suffice for a 43-year-old man. Or even a 5-year-old child. So, my body on its own adapted to the lousy deck of cards it was given. What it did was develop a web of peripheral blood vessels to make up for the loss of the major arteries in my body. So, for example, in my chest, there is just a... It looks like a tangled mess of small peripheral blood vessels. None of them are very big. And what that is something that my body grew in response to the lack of blood flow to try to compensate for it and to deliver the appropriate amount of blood and oxygen together. And I actually was shown photos of this. I did a scan of it and they showed it to me and it was just phenomenal. It just looked like a tangled mess. It kind of reminded me of a ball of rubber bands, you know, where it's just all tangled and messy. That's what my chest looked like. And the same was true for my legs. They did a scan there, and once again, it was just a thickened web of these blood vessels that were compensating for the loss of a major artery, and were trying to deliver oxidized blood to my legs so I would be able to walk. So that's pretty phenomenal. So my cardiologist truly meant it, that I have an entirely unique anatomy. Because the problem with that is that it pretty much sealed my fate with being a candidate for additional surgical intervention to correct my health problem. Because, again, I'll quote my cardiologist on this. He said we could cut through one vessel and it might not do anything. It might not matter. But then we might cut through the next vessel, not knowing what it does or anything. And you might go into instant cardiac arrest and die on the OR table. So that unique anatomy, unfortunately, while really cool, and it's amazing to think about what the body does to adapt, to survive, it really forfeits your ability to get corrective surgeries because it's unique to you. Your anatomy is unique. And they don't know what vessels they can cut and ones they shouldn't. And there was no way to do any sort of intervention without cutting some vessels because it was just a thickened mess, a web of vessels. So they would absolutely have to cut through it. You know, it's like taking a machete through a jungle, cutting through vines just to get through to where you're trying to reach, just to get to the heart. It is a tangled mess. And same is true for both my legs. So that as I said, really prevented surgery as any sort of option for me. And also, when they did their last heart catheterization, they measured the pressures inside my chest, and they were so significant. They worried that any sort of surgery into the chest cavity could result in instant death, instant cardiac arrest, and I'd be gone. He presented the case to the entire surgical team at a very large university hospital, and they declined to do anything. And the same case and same data was presented to the surgical team at Berkeley in California. And they too declined. The mortality rate of any sort of surgery is just excessively way too high for them to take any risk. To where now it's at a point where que sera, sera. It's out of their hands and there's nothing more they can do. Ergo, punting to home hospice. But I just wanted to touch on that. With weirdness is nothing new to me. my body has been weird my whole life, and doctors can't explain a lot of what my body does to this very day. It was so sad. In fact, in my last heart catheterization, my cardiologist came up to me and he just said, "Well, now I'm more confused." So that's not what you want to hear when you're recovering, you know, from sedation and going through a heart cath. Your doctor is confused and frustrated, more so than before he started. I think that's when you realize you hit the ceiling. So, that's just the unfortunate fact that of what I have to deal with, but also a very cool thing that the human body can adjust so much to stay alive. That's really amazing. Anyone who is even a slight geek, I think, would love learning that, to just geek out on that. I know I geeked out on that. And that's why I asked for copies of the scanned images and all that. And I thought it was so cool showing these images of this tangled mess of peripheral blood vessels that literally no one else has. And I'd take it and show it to friends and stuff because I thought it was so cool. But I went looking for them recently and I couldn't find them. They're somewhere. I wouldn't throw them away. They're somewhere in my home, but I couldn't find them when I last looked for them. But anyway, all that being said, that's why weird is absolutely not new to me. Thank you. Well, I think that is going to sum it up for me for this podcast. I've talked at length about how my health has changed, and how I'm a very strange dude when it comes to my body. So I think that's a good summary, at least as to where I am today. And I really don't know what to expect next. It's absolutely going to be a surprise, because I've had just so many changes in such a short amount of time that all I can do, frankly, is go with the flow. But with that being said, I want to thank you deeply for making it this long into my podcast. Something as boring as giving my strange health update. But I really appreciate it. I certainly do. I thank you very much for giving me a voice in this world and being there for me to share some of these things with. It's actually very therapeutic for me, which is really why I do the podcast more than anything. It's therapeutic to me, and it's helped me to come to pretty big decisions and changes in how I view the world itself. So, it's a selfish endeavor. But anyway, if you wish to support the podcast, you know, just make sure you click follow and turn on the notification bell on whatever application you're using. They're all different. Sometimes it's just a bell that's obvious, or it's an ellipses menu in the top right. It depends on what application you're on. But, you know, definitely feel free to do that. And if you want to go further, you could even go to patreon.com/mydogwilleatmyface. But, again, truly, I know I've said it a lot, but I have to say it again. I do thank you all deeply from the bottom of my heart for listening to what it is I have to say in these twilight days of my life. I know I've gained a lot of extra wisdom from doing the podcast, as I said, just from talking about things to myself. You know, they once said the owl of Minerva only takes flight in the darkest of night. And I think my experience echoes precisely that. It's just an old idiom from Roman days. I'm sure there's an author, but I can't remember who. But anyway, with all that said, I hope you all have a wonderful week ahead of you. And for now, I must say, auf Wiedersehen.